Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Our guest today has one of the most fun names to say and one of my favorite titles that I've ever heard. So Tina Medina, she is going to be coming and talking with us, an ally, an advocate, an incredible partner in crime, and a beautiful person. She is the founder and lead visionary of Vibe Movement. And so, I mean, lead visionary, that seriously, like if you have a better title than lead visionary, please let me know because I would like to borrow that the same way that I'm going to borrow lead visionary from Tina. Now, Tina was a mentor and educator for over 12 years in South Central LA, South Korea, and San Diego. She helps educators reconnect to their perfect and breathe meaning into their lives through coaching, retreats, professional development opportunities, and educational talks. This is all about what Vibe Movement does. She has a master's in peace and justice studies from the Kroc School of Peace Studies at University of San Diego. She also ran a program for high school youth leaders at the Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice for many years, focusing on restorative practices, community resilience, social cohesion, environmental and social justice, and youth peace leadership. Tina loves, all capital letters, yoga and meditation, and she says that both of these things have truly transformed her life. She has two incredible daughters who she adores with all of her heart and push her to be her absolute best self. Tina has so much richness to share with the world, so much depth of character. And, you know, she just, I mean, we're all these unique beings who have been through so many varied and different things that then bring us to these incredible perspectives and insights. And so I am so looking forward to this conversation today with Tina. We're going to have a real, authentic, honest conversation about what it looks like to do this work in 2021. So please join me in welcoming Tina Medina to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Tina Medina. Thank you so much for being here. I am so excited to have you here on the Inclusion First Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That's awesome. So Tina, please tell our listeners a little bit about your amazingness.
About my amazingness?
Well, yes.
It starts with my name, right? Because you can't just say Tina. It has to be Tina Medina. So there's that, you know, it's always a good way to introduce myself and make people smile with my name.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So I am an educator and entrepreneur, and I have been working in the education space pretty much my whole life. And, now I left the classroom and now I work with educators and help them become better, stronger impact leaders for their schools, their communities, and their students. And so I do that in a couple different ways, but that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. So what that sounds like to me, based on what we're talking about here, is that you are basically training people to be activists in the educational space. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because like the word activism has so many different meanings, you know, and for me, being an activist means that I get to start with myself. And so that's definitely a huge piece mm-hmm. of the work that I do with educators is we get to first look at like, how are we being, you know, loving, radical, you know, radical self-lovers to ourselves first so that we can really go out and make a big impact in the world the way that we see ourselves doing so. So activists for yourself first and then for your community and the people that you serve.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. the idea of activism, anti-racism, how you have to start with yourself, because if you don't, like, it's, and it's almost like easier to look around the world and be like, that's racist, that person is this, this person is that. Like, it's so much easier to do that than it is to be like, oh, like, what am I thinking? How am I behaving? How am I speaking? Where am I supporting anti-racist ideals? And when am I supporting, you know, not anti-racist ideals? And what does that look like? And that whole process of self-reflection and self-learning is really critical, I think, to the journey.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be an activist or anti-racist or, you know, feminist or, you know, whatever it is that you're really passionate about. I mean, you can't do that work very effectively if you're not taking the time to do the deep reflection on yourself and how you're showing up in the world and the kind of impact that you're having.
So, Tina, how do you do that? Like, what does that look like in your practice as far as the self-reflection? Because I imagine for someone who's doing the kind of work that you're doing and how long you've been doing it, like, it's not like a one and done. Like, the self-reflection piece is not one and done. So, if only, right? So,
so much further along in life.
Right. What does it look like for you?
I mean, for me, it's a daily practice. You know, I always start off my morning doing some meditation and always putting some movement into my life and you know, really kind of feeding my soul that way and making sure that I'm really grounded in my own way of being so that I can show up powerfully. And so, you know, a lot of times that looks like, you know, I'll do some journaling or I'll do my own kind of prayer through my meditation, or I'll pull some oracle cards or tarot cards and, you know, just like really channel in with my connection to my higher self and, you know, very deeply spiritual person. So have my connection with my guides or God and, you know, pull some cards and, you know, just like be really open to the messages that are coming through for me that day. And then really carry that into my way of being and moving through the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's always about getting super grounded in myself and what's possible so that I can really do the work, you know, because otherwise, I mean, you can fall into a pretty dark place if you are doing work in places that are really like in the shadows, you know, and anti-racism work is in the shadows. Like we're uncovering deep, long held firm with, you know, deeply held belief systems that have such a firm grip on our culture, on our structures. And it can really pull you down into a dark place, you know, and we need to do the shadow work. We need to go into those places so that we can uncover, you know, mm-hmm. what needs to be uncovered and bring it to the surface so we can get rid of it, because it needs to go. So old, antiquated systems that are still, you know, have such a firm grip on our culture, on our socialization, our education system. Obviously, that's where I do most of my work. I mean, it's the system was built this way, you know, so it's going to take a lot of work and effort to really be able to create a new system that is, you know, evolved and current with our times and supports, you know, all people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the idea of needing to show up to this work, like grounded, right? Otherwise you're going to be buffeted around. And if you aren't secure in who you are and why you're doing this, like the why, right, I think is also super important. Then like when you come up against different ideas, personalities, like strong personalities, even if, you know, they're on your side, right? It's still, you're going to be buffeted around. And so understanding what is the unique difference that I am here to make, and how do I show up and make that? And before I show up and make that, how do I like prepare myself? What is my process of, we'll say, quote unquote, armoring up? But really, there's a lot of self-love and self-care that is happening in this process, such that when you walk out of that door into these spaces, you are protected, you are ready, you are certain, and you are there to, you know, work in your power, which I love you use the word, you know, stepping into the idea of stepping into your power and showing up powerfully, I think is how you said it. So, I think that, you know, that looks different every day based on what is going on in the world, but then also what's going on inside of you, inside your home with your family. Like the swings, especially in this pandemic, have just been epic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and understanding that it gets to look different person to person too. Like what works for me doesn't necessarily work for you. You know, what feeds my soul. And sometimes I think a lot of times we can really look at what other people are doing and think that that's how it's supposed to be. And that's how it's supposed to work for me too. But it might not, you know, like riding a Peloton is not something that excites me, but you know, walking my dogs and going to a really hardcore boot camp class does, you know? And so it what is it that grounds you, you know, into your power so that you can show up, you know, and make the kind of difference that you want to make. And that means just taking care of all of the pieces of you, like all of yourself, and knowing that that's what works for me. And that's not necessarily what works for you, and having the confidence and in yourself to know that, like, I get to do this for me. I get to do this for me. And that's it. Like, I don't need any kind of excuse. I don't need any sort of explanation around that. You know, it's that idea of the radical self-love and the unapologetic, like showing up unapologetically and authentically you. That's the only way that we can make the difference that we want to make in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said, that it looks different. It looks different for everyone. And you know, how do you take care of your body, your mind, your spirit? I know for me in this pandemic, and doing this work and everything and personal things that have been going on over the last year and a half, like I feel like I'm having this like latent PTSD recently where I'm just like feeling anxious, feeling depressed, like feeling all these things. And I'm just like, where did this come from? But it's absolutely the culmination of like a year and a half almost at this point, right? Of everything that's going on. I'm like, all right, Carrie, you got to get outside in the sunshine. You cannot sit here in this room all day. You need to get out of the house and try to be social in some safe way, because you're turning into a hermit and it's not healthy. Like you need to run. And I'm not like a big runner. I'm not like running miles, but I love the little apps where it's intervals. We're like, I'll run for a minute and I'll walk for a minute. Like I love that. That's like my jam. So I'm like, you need to go out there and do your little run walk thing, because when I come home, I feel so much better. So much better. And that helps me. Yeah. So whatever your thing is.
Yeah. I hurt my calf a couple of weeks ago. So I just didn't do any of my boot camp classes or walk my dogs for a week. And I really, by the end of the week, I was like, okay, what is happening inside my brain? Cause I feel like I'm going crazy. And I mean, it really gives me the energy that I need, you know, and to be able to move my body I feel really grateful for the access that I have and the mobility that I have. And I'm, you know, really practice a part of my mindfulness practice right now is just like giving some love and appreciation to my body for being able to carry me through every single day, you know, to be able to speak, to be able to breathe without having to think about it. I mean, and so what does this have to do with anti-racism? I mean, it gives me the energy that I need to have tough conversations, to facilitate tough conversations, to show up powerfully even on social media, and having the courage to make a post that is probably going to trigger some people and to be okay with that, you know, I mean, to live out the vision that I have for myself and my organization and the work that I do and my children, you know, I get to be in tip top shape, like all around. I'm not talking about just like physique and looking good. Cause you know, I mean, I'm 45, like my body's always changing and I get to just love on that, you know, but taking care of all of me so that I can have the kind of sustainability and regeneration so I can keep going, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, Tina. No, this is super great. I'm glad that we kind of did a deep dive into this part that is such a key component of doing anti-racism work.
Yeah, probably not what we planned and probably not like the first thing that people think of, but you know, just from my own experience, that's where it always starts, you know, is taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Tina, what does anti-racism work look like in practice to you? And maybe even talking about some of the things that you're doing, because I want people to really start to see and understand that anti-racism work looks different. The same way that your self-care routine looks different, like the impact that you can make as an anti-racist, as an activist, looks different based on your own unique life and circumstances. So I would love to hear what your unique perspective is around what does anti-racism work look like in practice?
For me specifically, or are we talking about me as a person specifically, or
let's go through your own experiences. So people, cause I feel like people can connect into the details. We talk a little bit like at this high level, that's awesome. But I want to hear about you and what it is looking like in your life. What, you know, how that shows up, how that looks for you, and even how you like got into it. Right. I think that's a super interesting story.
Yeah. I mean, it is a really interesting story too, because, you know, I mean, I was born in a white body, a female white body. And so that has obviously shaped the way I show up and have, you know, engage in anti-racism work. And I will never be able to speak from a different perspective. I'll never be able to speak from a different body, you know? And so a lot of times when I talk about anti-racism, it's a lot like, especially as an educator, right? So when we look at the demographics the demographics for educators for this profession, we're talking about, you know, 82 to 85% of educators are white females. And then when you look at, you know, that other 18 to 15%, we're talking about BIPOC educators who are majority female. And then, when you start to break that down even more, then we're talking about 2 to 4%. I think it's the 2% of our educators in this country are Black men. And so there's such a disconnect between our student populations and our educator populations. And so it is critical that we're having these conversations and we're doing this work and we're actively, you know, teaching our students and people going into the workforce that this is a profession that is available to them. Mm-hmm. And so as a white woman, as a white educator, like, why am I having these conversations? You know, why am I talking about racism? Why am I talking about anti-racism? Why am I talking about co-conspiracy and allyship and all these pieces, right? Critical race theory. Because I see an obligation. I see a responsibility for myself in this role, in this body, to be able to speak to other people who are like me and talk to them about why it's important that we're talking about these things. Right.
Yeah. You
know, I mean, I really have taken it on like as an obligation that this is part of what I'm meant to do. I need to be a model for this, you know, and I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to, you know, confront my own racism because it's there, right? Even though I'm actively working to disrupt and dismantle racist structures, especially within education systems, I've also, you know, been born a white woman living in this country. And, you know, it took a long time for me to really start to look at my privileges and recognize those privileges, you know? And there's a difference between, okay, great. Like I've suffered through a lot of traumas as most people have through their life. And that still doesn't give me, a platform to speak from what it's like to be a victim of racial oppression. Right. So I know that that's something that it comes up a lot. It's like, well, I've been this and I've gone through this and, you know, you're still white at the end of the day, you're still white. And so you really don't know what it's like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting, you know, it's interesting work, right?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. And, I mean, I know we're not supposed to have favorites, but you're one of my favorite allies. And I love seeing all the amazing work that you're doing through social and talking to you about it as well. And I love that you've taken this up as a mantle, because the idea of like hearing a message from someone who looks like you it's huge. Like it has such a different impact. It's the same way like reviews are so powerful because you have this connection with whoever is, you know, whoever's there, giving it to you, whether it's a friend, a family member, or even a stranger. You're like, oh, all these people think this. This woman who looks like me thinks this. So it goes into your mind totally different.
in some cases than if someone who looked totally different than you was saying it, right? And it's just, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of this like human psychological effect, but it's like so real. It's so, it's so true.
It's identity theory, you know? I mean,
there you go. Thank you for the term. Yes. She's like, I got it.
Theory, you know, I mean, it's a natural human instinct to want to be around other people that look like you or, you know, think like you. And for me, you know, as my mom immigrated to the U.S. from Hungary when she was 19 years old. And so, you know, I lived in a small, you know, community that was predominantly white. I went to a Catholic school that was, you know, predominantly white. But I also felt very different because I went home every single day to a family that spoke a different language, that ate food. That, I mean, we were really, really different and very entrenched in our culture, very, very deeply. And like, it is in me, you know, my grandparents lived with us. And, you know, even though I looked like everybody else, I felt very different because I was living in this home and inside this culture that was not represented anywhere else around me. I mean, I know nobody who's Hungarian, you know, that lives in my community. And in that way, my whole life and all of my family lives in another country. So for me as a young person growing up, I gravitated to people who either looked different or were different or, you know, kind of marginalized in some way or another. I gravitated towards people like that. So at a very early age, I was very aware of differences, you know, and then as I got a little bit older, I would get infuriated by filling out applications that identify my race because there was nothing on there that allowed me to identify my roots, which was in Eastern Europe, you know, in Hungary. You know, I mean, it was my first language. It was, you know, I would get infuriated by like trying to be identified and put myself in some kind of box that did not represent me. And so that all of that just really became a catalyst for me to really look at hierarchical structures and patriarchal structures and racist structures. And so, I mean, that's kind of where it all started on a personal level, like in an intrinsic level. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I went into college that, you know, I had my first Black professor. I took an African-American social thought that just really, African-American social thought course that really rocked my world.
How did you end up in that class?
I have no idea. You know, ask myself this often, like, why would I register for that class? Because again, I was at, you know, a small Jesuit university that was predominantly white, you know, and so I have no idea. I don't know why, but I registered for this course and it was unbelievable. I was exposed to so much and things that I had never, you know, and the things that I was exposed to were really based more on conversations and casual conversations that we were having in class that was facilitated by my professor for any of the studying that we did or that, you know, it really came out from learning from my classmates because, you know, even though I was at a predominantly white school, within this course, I was now a minority because it was, you know, most of the students were African American or BIPOC in one way or another. And so I immersed myself into, you know, a classroom community that was pretty, you know, very diverse, and I was now a minority. And I find myself in those situations often in my life. You know, I moved to Korea and lived there for a while, and I the only tall, blonde, white person in my neighborhood. But I like being in those kinds of situations because it really helps me understand, you know, the rest of the world outside of, you know, this perspective of me being in a white body as a woman.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tina, when you were starting to share your story about your journey, you talked about, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You have made mistakes and you know, that's part of the journey. It's part of the process. Can you talk to us a little bit in more detail about that? Because I feel like a lot of people sometimes don't start and don't jump in because they're afraid of saying or doing the wrong thing, right? And so Like, what's an example of a time where you said or did the wrong thing? And obviously the world didn't end. You're still here. You're still doing the work, like bigger, badder, stronger than ever. So how do you navigate, those social, social justice face plants is what I like to call them,
Face plants. That's brilliant. Yeah. So many, so many. I mean, I kind of look at, have a few answers to this question, but I kind of trace race through my own life. And, as I've grown and become a human being that's, older, and now I'm a parent, and I look back at all the phases that I've gone through, right? Really, struggling with my white guilt, and then, coming to terms with my white privilege, and then, going through the saviorism period, and, and then just moving into this, like, okay, I've done so much, education, schooling, my own learning, my own life experiences that, I've moved beyond those other phases now in life, right, and feel like I can really speak on these things in a powerful way now at this point in my life. And I'm still making mistakes, and last year after the murder of George Floyd, everything was erupting, and I was getting so sick of hearing people talk about colorblindness. And I went live. I don't know where I went live, but if it was my personal Facebook page or my business page, but I went live and I was so in my own emotion of things, that I was in a very judgmental place and really calling people out. And it's still, I've debated so many times on, do I really need to take that video down, because it's not effective, for me and my energy and my stance and who I am as a person. I know that I'm more effective when I can come from a non-judgmental place, and really be in a place to have a conversation versus me coming at the coming to the table with a very strong, emotionally charged, judgmental place. I know that I'm less effective. And that video was really coming from that place, and I still toy with, do I take it down or do I leave it up? And I mean, it's been over a year now, and it's still there, but that was a moment where I really knew that I wasn't in integrity with who I am as an activist, and specifically an anti-racist activist. I know that I was not, wasn't fully aligned for me. And I do see that as a mistake, but I can also point to an example of, I was in a leadership group, and we came together, just to have an open dialogue about what was happening. And there was, one white woman in the group who just started talking about All Lives Matter versus Black Lives Matter. And it was 2 hours we had been in this conversation, and then all of a sudden, she's making this statement, and the whole energy group, and I mean, it got intense. It got, there was a lot of judgment. There was a lot of calling each other out and really wanting to come to terms with it, and to understand. And it was, we were all at the end of it, we were all so grateful that she had made that statement, because it opened up an opportunity for us to really come to a level of understanding that we wouldn't have had she not come out and said, all lives matter, screw the Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. It's kind of how she came out saying it. And at the end of it, we were all so grateful for it, because it opened up the door for us to go beyond kind of a superficial level kind of conversation. It was all really good, but we hadn't reached a level of depth yet. And because she started making these claims, it opened up the door for us to really go to a whole new level and to gain a deeper level of understanding that we hadn't reached yet. So it's a good example of say the wrong thing, say the wrong thing with an intention. Okay. With an intention to be open to learning, don't just say things to be an a-hole, but come to it with an intention, knowing that I might say the wrong thing, but I'm trusting that it's going to lead me to a new level of understanding that I didn't have before.
Tina, thank you so much for both of those stories. Sometimes I feel like, and this is not just in anti-racism work, but in everything, like the universe leads us to make like these mistakes so that we learn from them. But more importantly, we don't make them again on a larger scale when the stakes are much higher than in like those moments, right? I feel like lots of things that I've done, I'm like, oh, good thing I screwed up here instead of screwing up like in this bigger way, right? Later on doing this kind of same thing. So these learning opportunities are always coming to us. And being able to use that to go to like, I love the way you say it, like another like layer of depth that like we just weren't even getting there, right? Because it makes you, we're so hard on ourselves that it makes us like reflect in a totally different way. Like, wow, I should have thought about this and this and this and this. And like, why didn't you think about those things before? Like, who knows? You weren't at that level yet. But now this mistake has opened up this totally different level of awareness that you now have access to if you're approaching it in a way that is less defensive and more open. And I think it's, you know, that can be like a really difficult line to toe between like, oh, I did something wrong, but I want to defend what I did versus like, oh, I did something wrong. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. And how can I learn from this? How can I use this as an opportunity to connect instead of just going away in shame and guilt and like trying to bury it, right? So this idea of using it.
Which is where I think so many people stop, you know? It's like, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. I'm a terrible person. I must be a racist, you know, or whatever kind of conclusions you're making, you know? And so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and I'm not going to talk about this anymore. I'm going to avoid these conversations. I'm not going to engage. Which is then becoming not racist versus anti-racist, you know, and there's a really big difference between those things. And, you know, we have to just be comfortable being uncomfortable because this work is really uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable all the time. You know, I'm always nervous that I'm going to say the wrong thing and I'm going to offend somebody or just really like, you know, I don't know, expose my racist tendencies. And I mean, it's deeply ingrained. It's socialized, you know, it's intergenerational trauma that we're all experiencing through our own lineage.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And I mean, I think that when we make the mistake, like I said, it just opens us up. I, over the weekend, like I posted some things about Juneteenth, like, honestly, it was more frustrating than celebratory for me because I'm like, why this out of all the things that we need to do? How is this thing moving us forward the most right now at this time? While lots of people are having a totally different reaction and they're all valid, it's all fair, but I'm like, oh, what if someone like calls me out for like not celebrating Juneteenth and then they have all these like academic reasons why I'm totally stupid and wrong? Like all these things aren't going through my head, right? But at the same time, I also learned some things about Juneteenth that I didn't know. Like in my mind, Juneteenth was, I mean, it just sounded like a group of white guys got together and decided, okay, what, like, how can we celebrate like the end of slavery? Because I feel like if you ask Black people how we would want to celebrate the end of slavery, it wouldn't be like this particular holiday. It would be something else completely. Well, it turns out, guess what? It wasn't a group of white guys for once who decided. It was a guy in San Francisco, a Black man who migrated from Texas to California. I'm like, oh, well, it was thought of by Black people. But I still like, you know, still not convinced that this is like the best use of our time and resources at this time. And of course, there are pros and the whole acknowledgement and the celebration part of it. Absolutely. These are all good things, but you know, these ideas can be challenged. And I'm sure someone smarter than me, more studied than me can like make me feel real dumb for my own stance. Right. But at the same time, I'm where I am learning what I'm learning. And I mean, you know, I'm open to learning more. I have my opinions and aren't necessarily going to change in some cases, but in some cases I will come up against information that I'm totally wrong on and then have the opportunity to replace that with something that's right. Right. So I don't know.
I mean, you're kind of bringing up what we talked about just not too long ago too, about just like, I have a different way of, you know, self-care than you have a different way of self-care. And I mean, we are not all, just because I'm white doesn't mean I'm all this kind of person. Just because I'm, you know, whatever political party that I affiliate with doesn't mean that I'm going to wear a mask or get vaccinated. Right. Like there's so much, we're so willing to put each other in boxes and say, just because I look this way or I was born this way or, you know, my body looks this way, then I must be this kind of person and this is the path that I'm going to follow and these are the things I'm going to think and these are the, you know, policies that I'll abide by. And that's just not true. It's not how it works. I am my own person with a thousand different, you know, pieces of me that all come together collectively to, you know, be in this body every single day, just like you have your own set of experiences and education and, you know, just all of it. Like, mm-hmm. We need to stop assuming that just because I look this way, that I am this kind of a person. And just because you look that way, then you are a certain kind of person. Because you're Black, then you must celebrate Juneteenth and you must think it's the best amazing thing ever. Right? Like, those are, we walk around with right. So many different assumptions. And I'm constantly learning that, you know, we don't all think the same. I'm constantly being reminded by that. Like, we don't all think the same, even though there's a certain amount of research out proving a certain thing. And like, I'm supposed to follow that because I'm a certain way. No, no, just stop. Stop trying to put me in a box. You know, we get to stop policing each other and telling each other what we get to think and how we get to show up.
Yeah.
Me.
Stay in your lane, man. I say that to my partner sometimes. I'm like, stay in your lane. This is my lane. That's your lane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay in your lane, people. Oh, Tina, this has been really great. So do we have time for one more question?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. All right. So I really have two more questions for you. So how about two more questions? Okay, so the first last question. So Tina, we have lots of people listening who want to get involved, want to take action, but they're really not sure how. And we've talked about a lot of different ways, a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different things that you can consider as you're figuring out what you're supposed to do. What advice would you give to someone who's kind of on the sidelines, kind of on the fence? They have a desire to make a difference, but they're afraid, they're uncertain. How do we get them to take that first step and continue on this path of anti-racism and activism?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always going to say, start with you, you know, like start with you, take a course, there's some really great, there's a lot of great courses you could do or a book that you could read that you feel really connected to that's motivating to you, you know, but I'm always going to say, start with your own work first, like start with your own inner work first. And so, find somebody or find a course or find a platform that you really trust, that you feel aligned with, that feels like, yeah, this is really going to help me, and be really supportive through the process, because you don't want to walk away from any kind of work that you're going to do that is just going to perpetuate and increase any kind of shame and judgment.
Right.
That's not a place where we grow from, at least not authentically, you know, and this gets to be authentic. So that would be my first, you know, thing is like, work on yourself, do your work on yourself, do the deep work. And then from there, I would really say, like, connect with people that, or organizations, that you feel really support the work in a powerful way that you can get behind, you know, if, whether that's like a particular person whose work that you really admire, or it's an organization that, you know, is making big moves in the space that you really want to support. But start to create your own network of organizations and individuals to follow and sign up for their email lists and follow them on your social channels and engage with them, you know, engage with the work that they're putting out, and know that if they're saying something that's making you feel uncomfortable, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. And then use that as an opportunity to take the reflection again on the deep work. It's like what we've been saying this whole time, Carrie. It's like, it doesn't stop. It's not like you can take a course or read a book and then you're done, you know, and now you're an anti-racist. It's like, no, it's daily work. It's daily practice. Daily. Yeah.
The layers. There's so many layers.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I mean, all topics, but once you start to dig in, you realize how much you don't know. And because we're dynamic people and the world is always changing, when you step out of your door, your opportunity to embed yourself in anti-racist thought, speech, and behavior is different every single day, right? And whether you take up a particular cause or you stand up as a model, a role model for other people, no matter what situations you're navigating or anywhere in between those two examples, it's always changing. So there's always opportunity for growth and always new challenging experiences to help us continue to grow on the path. So,
yeah, I mean, and even if you just look at defining words, you know, I mean, when I first started, when I was in college, I was facilitating race relations conversations. It was a program called STAR, Students Talk About Race. And so as a college student, I would go into middle schools and high schools around South Central LA and facilitate, you know, very strategic conversations with these students around race and racism. And back then, you know, I remember sitting in a classroom with some students and we were talking about like, am I African American or am I Black? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's still today is such a relevant conversation, but you know, I had one kid in the room say like, do not call me Black. I'm African American. Black is a color. I'm not a color. I'm a human. And my roots come from Africa and I live in America. So call me African American. And then I had, you know, a student sitting right next to him who was like, no, I have no ties to anybody in Africa. I know nothing about the continent, you know, and I'm Black. So call me Black, you know? Right. And I think just what you're saying is so on point. It's like, it's so personalized and it really takes time. You know, we need to take the time is what I'm trying to say is that we need to take the time to really learn about each other and from each other so that we can look at each other as humans and individuals versus a collective that there everybody within this collective is all the same because it's not. It's dynamic. It's rich. It's diverse. You know, and it takes time and a willingness to move outside of our own comfort zones and to be able to go into these spaces and develop relationships with people who, you know, are in a different collective than us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That willingness, that openness, that curiosity, the willingness to be wrong and to look dumb, but then not stop, right? Like, you know, that's part of this journey is we fall down, but we get back up because there's so much work to be done. And it's important that we do it because we're uniquely positioned to do a very specific thing, each and every one of us. So Tina, yeah. This has been amazing. the awesomeness is flowing so strong and I'm so happy that we were able to have this conversation. Can you tell people where they can find you if they want to learn more about you and the work that you're doing out in this world?
Yeah. So, I am most active in two places. The first one is my Instagram. So you can find me at _thevibemovement_. I love Instagram. It's my favorite place to hang out. And then my other favorite place to hang out is inside my own private Facebook group called the Upleveled Educators. So if you are an educator and you really want to be in community with other really amazing educators who are, you know, up to really good things and want to make a big impact and really want to prioritize their self-care so that they can experience success on all levels of life, not just professionally, but personally as well, then please come join that. It's free to join and really amazing community. And we do lots of, I do lots of lives in there and I have a weekly show called Your Soul's Curriculum. And so that's a really amazing community to be a part of. And if you're also an educator and you're interested in being engaged in, you know, very specific conversations around anti-racism in education, then please, I'm relaunching. I'm declaring it now. I'm relaunching.
You heard it here first.
My monthly show. It's called What Color Got to Do With It. And it's all anti-racism in the education space. I bring on different speakers. There's always 5 speakers plus me as the host every single month. And they're always, you know, educators are in the education space or somehow connected to the topic. I change the topic every single month and bring on a whole new set of panelists for a whole new theme. And 2 of those 5 speakers are always youth. So they're either high school students or college students or recent college grads, or in that, you know, in that age bracket. So that is going to be relaunching in August.
Amazing. That show was so great. I've co-opted some students to be, I interviewed Leia actually just like last week. So you have amazing students on there, amazing people generally, but I mean, I totally love the idea of bringing our youth into these conversations because they're leading the world here in just, you know, a few short years, right? So let's see what they have to say. They've got some incredible things to say. So it's really rich.
they're speaking from firsthand experience. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, August's conversation is focused on, you know, why white educators need to be talking about race. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm doing that intentionally at the start of the new school year so that it is front and center and on everybody's mind as they're entering into the new school year, that this is important. You know, it's yeah. not important, it's critical work. And that's how we get to start the next school year. So be on the lookout for that because it's happening.
Awesome. We will drop all this information in the show notes so that you can have easy access to Tina Marita and the Vibe Movement. Tina, thank you so much for being here today. This was incredible.
I love you, Carrie.
I love you too.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.